Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's September 11th. Currently, we've got 55 degrees here in Old Town Park City and 57 degrees in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. I hope you are having a great start to the day. And we are waking up to a mixture of some clouds and sunshine. But we've got some big weather changes on the way. Let's first talk about the strong winds that are going to be increasing as we go throughout the day from the south and west. We'll likely see winds pretty sustained around 20 to 30 miles per hour as we go throughout the rest of our Wednesday afternoon. So if you're going to be traveling on any of those west to eastbound roads like I-80 or heading down towards I-70 or any roads in between that go west to east across the state, just know those wind gusts at times could create some travel hazards, especially if you're driving some of those high profile vehicles. So make sure you have two hands on the steering wheel if you're going to be out and about. Now, the second thing that we've got to talk about is what the wind is going to be doing. And that wind is going to be bringing in a thick plume of smoke and haze from those wildfires from the Southern California. So as we go throughout the day, look for more smoke and haze to cover the skies. And at times it could be quite thick out there. Now, the air quality is forecast to stay in the moderate category, but I wouldn't be surprised to see that bump up into the code orange category by late this afternoon as that smoke and haze starts to fill the sky. So that's the second thing that the winds are going to do. The third thing the winds are going to do is going to continue to bring in some much drier air across the state. So rain chances are pretty much going to be slim to none as we go throughout the rest of today. But the big story is with that dry air moving in and those strong winds, that's going to create a critical fire danger for us. And so that means that any fires that get going or start could spread rapidly out there. So you've got to use that extreme caution if you're going to be doing anything that could lead to some sparks. That could be as simple as parking on the grass somewhere and cranking up your vehicle. So just use extreme caution again as we go throughout the day, because what we don't want is to have any local fires starting with this very strong wind out there in place, because, again, any fires that start will spread quickly. All right, now that we've got all that out of the way, let's talk about the good news here with that cold front as it makes its way on through later on this evening and tonight. It'll come through mainly dry. There's a slight chance that we could see a few isolated showers late tonight into early Thursday morning, but the bigger story is going to be the wind switching from the south and west to the north and west. And that northwest wind, of course, we like that because that's going to bring in some much cooler air across the region. We're going to see our temperatures plummeting as we go into the next 24 hours. So today in Park City, we're looking at highs in the upper 70s to around 80. How about highs only around 60? Yeah, only around 60 as we go into our Thursday afternoon. That is going to be a big change. And in the Heber Valley, we're talking highs today in the upper 80s to around 90, with highs only in the upper 60s to around 70 at best as we go into your Friday. So about a 20-degree temperature drop, and we stay pretty nice with sunshine heading into the weekend. So get ready, Leslie. Fall-like weather is finally here.
Yeah, sweater weather. A lot of people happy about that.
Yes.
Thank you, Cedric. Thank you. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Friends of the Library board member Sue Niblock, along with County Librarian Dan Compton, with details about the upcoming used book sale happening this weekend, as well as some other library events. Girls on the Run program director Ivy Denahan discussing this year's season. It's starting September 16th. And finally, Heber Valley Chamber Public Relations Manager Jessica Turner with a look ahead at some of the upcoming events happening in the Heber Valley. Then stay tuned for The Mountain Life. Today's guests include author Amanda Jones. She talks about her new book, That Librarian, The Fight Against Book Banning in America. It's the story of how this former Librarian of the Year found herself targeted and threatened, and how it has led to her becoming a Right to Read activist. Then college admissions consultant Jill Gulley discusses the ins and outs of today's college admission process, also offering tips for how to help your student not only find the right school, but hopefully be accepted into it as well. Taking a look at some local news now. If State Route 224 cannot become an underpass at Kimball Junction, then what are the area's other options? KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that UDOT will pick one of two ideas.
The so-called A and C alternatives are the finalists from a field of more than 30 ideas to fix Kimball Junction's traffic circulation. But what's the difference? The Utah Department of Transportation, which will pick between the two, calls alternative A the split diamond interchange option. That's because it would split traffic between the existing Kimball Junction exit off Interstate 80 and a new one onto Landmark Drive. Here's County Transportation Planner Carl Miller.
Which would provide an interchange west of Kimball Junction to bring traffic off of that closer to the outlet mall.
The roundabout at Ute Boulevard and Landmark Drive would turn into a signal to handle the additional traffic. UDOT would turn I-80 and State Route 224's interchange into a tight diamond that would resemble Highway 40 and State Route 248, where there are four-way signals at each off-ramp. Alternative C is labeled the road widening option because it widens roads around the Kimball Junction area, including 224. The main artery would receive additional left turn lanes, and side streets like Ute and New Park Boulevards would get extended turn lanes too. Both alternatives include upgraded pedestrian trails with longer ramps for ADA accessibility and a trail connection up from Redstone to the southeast corner of Olympic and 224. UDOT is scheduled to pick one of the two in 2025. Alternative A is ballparked at around $100 million, while Alternative C could be $40 million in 2025 money. Here's Miller again.
We really see Kimball Junction as a town center, not just a place to move traffic through as quickly as we can.
To that end, Summit County is planning a pedestrian overpass. That's not something UDOT is spearheading because the state agency's priority is moving traffic, and a tunnel moves people more quickly. But the county is hoping to revamp the Kimball Junction Transit Center and Library into a town center with a plaza. It would be the launch point for a pedestrian connection to the eastern side of the junction. Council members see potential in an overpass to create a visual gateway to the Park City area. That plan is currently being worked out in a subcommittee with Salt Lake City-based developer Dakota Pacific Real Estate. Together, the county and the real estate firm may move some of the transit center underground and down the hill to make room for a plaza. They've paused separate litigation at least until October while they collaborate. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, the Park City Council is unsure about using ranked choice voting in the 2025 municipal election. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more about that.
In 2018, Utah lawmakers passed a bill allowing cities to try ranked choice voting through January 2026. Ranked choice voting is an alternative election method in which primaries are eliminated and candidates are ranked by preference. On Thursday, the Park City Council discussed the possibility of using it in the 2025 election when the mayor's seat and two spots on the city council will be up for grabs. Council members Ryan Dickey and Tana Tolley both expressed support for trying ranked choice voting. Dickey cited its simplicity and referenced the speed of France's recent legislative election.
France just elected their president and it took 2 weeks. And in Park City, we have these elections for city council that just go on and on and on.
Tolley, who is up for re-election next year, says it could remove the financial burden of running a campaign.
You know, I spent quite a bit of money that I don't think what I would have spent had I not had to go through a primary. And I think I think we just want to create way less of a barrier. And if money is one of those things to getting people to not want to run, then I want to make sure that they do know that they can run and they don't have to spend that kind of money.
During the legislative session earlier this year, some lawmakers tried to block cities from using ranked choice voting. Their efforts were unsuccessful. However, it's unclear if ranked choice voting will be allowed in Utah after 2025. That uncertain future left other Park City Council members unsure about whether to pursue ranked choice voting. During public comment at Thursday's meeting, Utah County Clerk Aaron Davidson expressed concerns about ranked choice voting. Davidson cited the recent city council election in Lehigh, which drew 17 candidates. He says while ranked choice voting provides some benefits, there are challenges.
It's like medicine. It works until it doesn't. Everyone thinks it's great. There's a lot of great things about it. The idea of it, I like, but there's just some complexities that people just can't quite figure out.
The council did not make a final decision Thursday. A new study by Utah Valley University analyzing ranked choice voting throughout the state is expected to be released soon. The council plans to revisit the topic and look at the study's results sometime later this year. The city must notify the Lieutenant Governor's office by May 1st if it intends to use ranked choice voting in the 2025 election. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Friends of the Summit County Library is hosting a used book sale next week. In the studio, I have Summit County Librarian Dan Compton. On the phone, I have Friends member Sue Niblock. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sue, let's start with you. Maybe you can just tell us when and where the sale will be.
Yes, thank you, and good morning, everyone. So the Friends of the Library of Summit County are having our used book sale Thursday, September 19th, Friday the 20th, and Saturday the 21st. It'll be at the Kimball Junction branch, which everybody I think knows where that is. We have hundreds, if not thousands, of used books for sale in good condition. We're going to fill up the entire auditorium, and we urge everybody to come. I think the most important date is the first one on the 19th, because that is the pre-sale, the early access, if you are a Friends of the Library of Summit County member. If you're not, you can come that evening and sign up and join and get access right away.
Okay, what's the membership cost?
$10. It's a pretty good deal to give you early access to the book sale. And at the sale, I think our prices are very reasonable and quite simple. It's $2 for hardbacks, $1 for paperbacks, and kids get 2-for-1. We have a lot of paperbacks. We have books of all different types, but particularly this time, we seem to have a lot of romance and Western books, but something for everyone.
All right. And then the hours Friday and Saturday are what?
So, Thursday was 5 to 8, and then Friday and Saturday are 10 to 6. The other thing I wanted to mention, Leslie, is that we are also selling library bags to Friends of the Library, and you can either buy one there for $15, or you can bring your own, and you get to fill it with as many books as you can stuff into it, and it's only going to be $15, which really is a great bargain.
Is that during all hours?
Yes.
Just mm-hmm. the last couple of hours. Okay.
So the bags are $3 to purchase and they're $15 to fill. And if you have a bag from prior years, you can fill those for $15.
Okay. All right. So where do all the books get stored?
Just in the basement of the Richens Building, Kimball Junction branch. We collect, our patrons come in every day and donate books, and some we're able to put in the library on a couple of shelves, and people can come in anytime they want and look at those, but there's just so many that we store them throughout the year till we have sales.
All right, so do you take book donations then at all of the branches in Colville and Camas and Kimball Junction?
Mostly we prefer to take them at Kimball Junction because we have the storage space. In Camas and Colville, we're very limited, and oftentimes if you donate there, they have to bring them over to the Kimball Junction branch anyway.
Okay, so how many sales, Sue, do you do a year? Does the Friends do a year?
It has varied, quite frankly, since in the last couple of years, but we tend to do 2 to 3. We did a pop-up sale in the spring last year. In, I think, early December, we did a big sale. This one will be a big one as well. Part of it depends on our inventory. When that basement that Dan was talking about gets quite full, then it's time to do another sale.
Right. All right. Do you need any volunteers to help you out?
We do. Yes, please. it takes a lot of people to put on a book sale. We need people to help stack books, restack them, sort them, help us set up, take down. So if anyone is interested, we have a website that you can go on with an email address that you can email us and tell us you're interested. You can contact Dan. You can contact myself or say something, perhaps at one of the libraries that you'd like to help us out. This is a definite community effort, and we are all volunteers, so we certainly would appreciate any additional help.
Okay. Do you have the website that you can give us?
Yes. The website, it's folscut.org. So one thing I want to say is if you're just Googling Friends of the Library of Summit County, it's important to put in the word Utah, because there is a Friends of the Library in Summit County, Colorado. And I know several people who have, accidentally given them their money. They cost more than we do. So if you Google us, that website will pull up.
Okay. Now, all of the money that you raise at these book sales, Dan, goes to fund items that you don't have money in the budget for. Talk to us a little bit about what some of those items the Friends have helped purchase recently.
Sure, thank you. Mostly the Friends funding is able to help us offer programming that we're not able to do on our own with our own budget. For example, the One Book, One Community program that we all just enjoyed with author Collie Fajardo-Anstein was paid jointly from the Summit County Friends of the Library, and also with the Park City Friends of the Library. They paid for her honorarium and travel expenses to come to the community and speak. One that we're really looking forward to here in October is our second human library event. So that's going to be on Saturday, October 5th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And the Friends pays for all the licensing fees and expenses for that. And that's where we have the opportunity for our library patrons to sit down and have a one-on-one conversation with a human book. Last year, we had 10 human books, and they included, they always are people who have experienced prejudice in some form. So just a couple of examples were a refugee, a recovering alcoholic, sexual abuse survivor, someone who is blind. And people were able to come and have a conversation one-on-one in a safe space and ask any questions they would like and hopefully walk away from that with better understanding. So that's one that they fund, as well as our other most successful adult program ever is the Great Decisions. The curriculum for that is set by the Foreign Policy Association. And topics next year include the future of NATO, U.S.-China relations, AI, and American national security, and five other international topics. They meet for 8 weeks. 75 adults in our community enjoy that program weekly. We have volunteers from our Friends of the Library Group who also help with that program. And that's also turned into another program called Emerging Issues that we run throughout the rest of the year when we're not doing the Great Decisions. And community members are able to talk about other issues. So the Friends have really helped us to strengthen our adult programming offerings, not only through financing it, but through volunteers. And we can't thank them enough.
Yeah. So back to the human book event happening on October 5th. Do people need to register for that and to choose a top person that they want to talk to?
You can register mostly just to be reminded about the event, but you can just show up anytime from 11 to 2. There will be a board that lists the human books that are currently available for a conversation, and you can get in the queue and say, this is who I'd like to speak to, and kind of get in line. And then when it's your turn, you'll have the opportunity to talk to them.
Okay. And Sue, in terms of when the board meets to decide what it's going to fund, do you just basically take the recommendations from the library staff, or?
So when we meet, Dan is usually present at our meetings, and he puts forward funding requests, and we review them. We ask a lot of questions. You know, we want to help support Dan and the library programs. We, you know, support three branches in Summit County, in Kimball Junction, Colville, and Camas. So it's quite a bit. But we do have a robust discussion about it. If I may, I wanted to mention another one that we funded that I think is one of my favorites, is that the Friends funded a monarch butterfly station in the Colville branch, which is a little garden with plants and flowers that attract monarch butterflies. And this year they had five monarch caterpillars that they kept in little cages, so the kids were able to watch the transformation over time of, you know, the caterpillars into butterflies. And I think that's pretty special.
All right. Just a couple of other events I noticed on the website. This Thursday you've got art piano performance happening. This could be outside, so bundle up.
Yes, local composer Edward Wald is going to be there and offered to do a free concert using our art piano. We had some this summer in partnership with Utah Symphony, and he was able to attend some of those and wanted to perform as well. So that's a free concert at 4 o'clock on tomorrow, Thursday.
Yeah. What's art piano?
There was a program called Art Pianos for All, and it was in partnership with the Summit County Park City Arts Council. They got grant funding to pay artists to paint different pianos throughout the community. And these are pianos that need to be in an accessible location so that people can play them as much as possible. So ours is out on our little patio area at the Kimball Junction Branch, which anyone can go play it anytime they want. It's outside. We did just have it tuned, so it should be ready to go tomorrow. But there's one at our Camas branch as well. That one is inside and in the little vestibule area. I think there's about 8 to 10 of them throughout the community in different locations. It's a wonderful program.
Okay, I was going to say, sitting outside, it's going to need a lot of tune-ups.
Yep. Yeah. Yep, it's done surprisingly well for being outside as long as it has, and we have professional musicians playing on it, and they enjoy it.
All right. I also wanted to note another virtual author event. This is coming up next Wednesday, the 18th, with author Nate Klemp. How do these things work, the virtual author events?
So we joined a consortium a couple years ago. It's one of the best program decisions we ever made, because we can't afford to bring in a lot of authors. They're just really expensive to pay those honorariums. But we joined this consortium with libraries all across the country, and they provide access to these virtual author events, at least three a month. And we're talking New York Times best-selling authors. You can watch from the comfort of your home whenever you want. You can watch it live. When you watch it live, you have the opportunity to ask questions, and the moderator will try to ask those. But if you don't have time and you need to watch it later, they make them available after the fact, and you can still watch them and enjoy those. We love this program.
Yeah, so do you choose which authors you want to bring to the library?
I don't really get to choose. We can make recommendations, but they've done a wonderful job finding authors, and they really focus on bringing in a diverse group of authors, a lot of minority authors, women authors, and I just really like what they're about. This summer, they even did something interesting. With kids being out of school, they brought in some children's authors like Kate DiCamillo. I mean, hello. These are incredible people that kids got to hear from as well. So for the amount that we pay for that to be part of that consortium, and offering three of these at least a month is just a bargain, and it provides this access to the community. It's one of my favorite programs we do now.
Okay, people can find out who's coming.
Just go to our website, and it always shows you what's upcoming. They usually have, I think they have through November on the website of everyone that you can see who's coming up.
So did you want to add something?
No, I think Dan covered it very well.
Okay. Finally, I just wanted to mention the Summit County 2024 Strategic Plan Survey is online. What do you do with that?
So we're looking to do our next strategic plan for the years 2025 through 2027, and we are just seeking patron feedback at this point. We're leaving that open until September 15th. It should take 5 minutes or less to fill it out, and we're just looking for the community's input on where they think we should be headed. We'll also be surveying our staff and then putting those together to form the plan. So I appreciate everyone who's taken the time to already fill it out. There are a few more days, and we would love to hear from you. Your voice does matter, and you can help help us with our direction for the next few years.
Right. So this is how you decide. Do we keep offering the great decisions, or
right.
do we keep offering the virtual author events?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, that's a lot, and we appreciate you giving us a voice here, Leslie, and taking the time with us.
You bet. Okay, Dan Compton, Sue Neublock, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, the Summit County Sheriff's Office says it's seen an enormous increase in kids riding e-bikes recklessly, but enforcement is easier said than done. KPCW's Connor Thomas has more on that.
Summit County Sheriff's Office spokesperson Sergeant Skylar Talbot says deputies are receiving more and more reports of kids speeding or driving their e-bikes recklessly.
We've kind of come up against, okay, well, this is a difficult thing for deputies to enforce. You know, we're certainly not going to, you know, chase kids through parking lots. That's just going to increase the danger.
So Talbot says they're educating parents and their children about the law, and it's not because they don't want to see kids getting outdoors or having fun.
What we don't want to see is kids getting hurt. And our fear, and I think a fear that's shared by a lot of the community, is that one day we're going to have a kid very badly injured or tragically killed on an e-bike.
That's a concern shared by local governments after three Wasatch High School students on an e-bike collided with a car and were hospitalized. Midway is weighing restrictions, and Oakley is considering classifying certain e-bikes as motor vehicles. Park City and Summit County passed 15-mile-an-hour speed limits on some trails. Utah law recognizes just three narrowly defined classes of e-bike. Class 1 e-bikes are pedal-assisted but without a throttle, and they reach 20 miles an hour. Class 2 are pedal-assisted with a throttle and reach 20 miles an hour as well. Class 3 e-bikes are pedal-assisted with no throttle and reach 28 miles an hour. Helmets are required for anyone under the age of 21 riding a Class 3. Anyone under 16 can't operate a Class 3, and anyone under 14 needs to be with a parent. Anyone under the age of 8 cannot operate any class of e-bike in public. State law is mostly silent, though, on e-bikes that don't conform to those three classes. A new law that took effect in May says out-of-class e-bikes sold in Utah must have a sticker that says they are not e-bikes. It stops short of formally defining them as motor vehicles. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, the Wasatch County Health Department has issued a danger advisory due to a harmful algal bloom at the Deer Creek Reservoir. Algae in the water around the Charleston day use area is producing high levels of dangerous toxins. State health officials say drinking the water could hurt or even kill humans and animals, and any exposure to the water could cause illness. Visitors are advised not to swim or water ski, and to take precautions if you're boating or fishing in the area, and keep your dogs out of the water. Harmful algae are affecting other parts of the reservoir as well. The Walsburg area is under a warning. Health officials say visitors should stay out of the water and clean their fish well. You can learn more about harmful algal blooms online at kpcw.org. Girls on the Run starts its full fall program next week, and on the phone with details, I have program director Ivy Denahan. Good morning, Ivy.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, Ivy, you started to tell us that Girls on the Run is for girls in grades 3 through 8. It runs for 8 weeks. And what else can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so girls 3rd through 8th grade, and we do the program twice a year for 8 weeks, in the fall and in the spring. And during those 8 weeks, the girls are learning a variety of life skills, empowerment skills, character development skills, really skills that are meant to help with their self-confidence and have a lasting impact on their self-confidence, all while training for that 5K. So during the 8 weeks, the girls will train, and all of our schools will come to Sugar House Park to run that 5K.
Okay, so are you still registering girls for this?
Yes, we are. So our program for fall actually starts next week. So we'll have about 40-plus schools starting next week, and they can register all through the second week of the season.
Okay. And so what schools here in the Summit and Wasatch County area do you have?
We have a lot more schools in your area in the springtime. So we don't have any schools on board for this fall program. However, our school and girl applications and coach volunteer applications open October 1st for our spring 2025 season. So we would love to see some more Park City and Summit County schools coming on for next spring season.
Okay. And so it's a running program, and you use what? People who are runners themselves?
No, and that's actually what's really great about our program is just our inclusiveness of all different athletic abilities. So our volunteer coaches do not have to be runners to run the program. If they are, that's great. They can always run with the girls. But the girls don't have to be runners to do the program either. So we're really trying to grab girls of all different athletic abilities who love running, who maybe don't running or want to get into running, and just show them that they can be powerful, they can have confidence, and they can complete a 5K even in that 7 to 14-year-old age range, and they can do it confidently and feel good about themselves.
Okay. And then girls, again, you say last week show up at Sugar House Park and actually run a 5K. Is that like something new for them?
Yeah, for a lot of them. And that's why in our program, they actually do a practice 5K right on site at their school or at the park they practice at. And that lets the community come in, that lets the parents come in. And so it's about the 5th or 6th week of the season. They'll do a practice 5K during their scheduled practice time. And that's just to teach them, hey, you're going to be running a little over 3 miles. And so they're not shocked. And then they get to Sugar House Park and do one lap and see they have a whole other lap to go and don't get too surprised. But it's so cool to see them cross the finish line and just see the joy and the accomplishment on their faces, knowing that they did it, they finished the 8 weeks, and it's meant to have a lasting impact on their lives.
Okay. If people want more information, where can they go?
So they can go to our website, girlsontherunutah.org, and you'll see a variety of ways to get involved. You can be a volunteer coach. You can help just be a sponsor. We're always taking in sponsorships, and we actually have our big fundraiser next Friday, our sneaker soiree at the Alumni House at the University of Utah, and it's just a fun night. You wear cocktail attire or dresses with sneakers, and it's a fun way to get involved and learn more about our program. So that's next Friday, September 20th, if anyone's interested.
Okay. All right, Ivy, thanks for your time this morning.
Yeah, thanks, Leslie.
Well, Deer Valley leaders are meeting with the Park City Planning Commission tonight as the resort moves forward with plans to develop the Snow Park base area. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more on that.
Wednesday marks the first time Deer Valley officials will meet with the Planning Commission since the City Council established a public-private partnership with the resort in December. The partnership is detailed in a letter of intent that outlines several requirements as Deer Valley seeks approval to develop Snow Park. The City Council also moved to vacate public right-of-way on portions of Deer Valley Drive as part of the negotiations. The resort wants to build a new ski-in, ski-out village surrounded by hotels and commercial space on the existing parking lots. A staff report for Wednesday's meeting says Deer Valley hopes to have the first phase of the project approved in December. Resort officials say they want to begin construction next spring. The first phase of the project, under review by the Planning Commission, involves plans to build a three-level underground parking garage and public transit hub adjacent to the Snow Park Lodge. The garage is proposed to include nearly 2,000 spaces. The City Council negotiated a 20% day skier parking reduction as part of the public-private partnership in an effort to ease the traffic impacts of the development. Following Wednesday's meeting, Deer Valley will host an open house on Thursday evening for people to learn more about the resort's plans. Planning Commission meeting information and details on the open house can be found at kpcw.org. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
And at the start of the school year, no crossing guards were assigned to stop traffic on Heber's Main Street, but that decision was quickly reversed. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has the latest.
It's common for students at Wasatch High School to head off campus for lunch, but many of them cross Main Street, a four-lane highway, to get their meals. That proved dangerous last September. A 14-year-old girl was flown to the hospital in critical condition after an SUV hit her near the intersection of Main Street and 8th South. For a while, crossing guards were stationed there at lunchtime, but there's no legal requirement for them to be there. Heber Police did not initially plan to assign crossing guards for that intersection this school year. Wasatch County Board of Education member Kim Dickerson says district leaders learned about the change from KPCW's reporting.
We were made aware that way that we didn't have crossing guards on Main Street, and so we wanted to look into it further, and so we asked the school district leaders to look into it and see why we didn't have crossing guards here.
She says District Superintendent Paul Sweat reached out to Heber Police to figure out a solution. Starting Monday, crossing guards began duty to help students navigate the traffic safely. Even though it's not typical for high school students to have crossing guards, Dickerson says the Main Street spot requires extra safety measures.
Student safety is a priority for us, and Main Street is a unique situation, right, because we have a state highway that runs right through the center of our community.
She says she hopes to have lunchtime crossing guards at the spot permanently. Police Chief Parker Severs says thousands of cars and trucks traverse the highway every day.
I believe it's about 60 to 70,000 vehicles travel down Main Street each day.
Going forward, crossing guards will be on duty at the spot every day during the high school's lunch period. Amanda Edwards, one of Wasatch High School's vice principals, says the school wants to do all it can to keep students safe.
And it's hard to get cars to stop for kids if there's not added bells and whistles. So it's been really great to be able to put the student safety first.
And Sever says more plans are in the works to improve pedestrian safety on Main Street.
We've ordered some light-up signs and light-up cones and just some other things to get drivers' attention to slow them down and hopefully keep our crossing guards safe as well as the students.
He asks drivers to respect crossing guards and students and wait for everyone to get back on the sidewalks before resuming driving.
Drive like they were your kids that are out on the road.
A team of close to 30 crossing guards helps keep students safe around Wasatch County. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
On the phone now with an update from all that's going on in the Heber Valley, I have the Heber Valley Chamber's Public Relations Manager, Jessica Turner, on the line. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's just start with some of the community events you've got happening. Tractor Days, that sounds fun.
You know, yeah, so I thought it'd be fun to share a few things that some of the Wasatch Back residents might like to participate in, including Tractor Days. It happens every year at the Kohler Creamery. They did take a pause last year, so it is returning this year, and it will be this weekend. Dates on that will be Friday and Saturday, the 13th and 14th. They go all day long. If you would like to also add on a dairy farm tour, you can do that at 11 a.m. You just need to book those tickets in advance and online. The Tractor Days, though, is really targeted toward kids and families. it gives these younger kids a chance to have their Tonka toys come to life, so to speak. It's life-size tractors and other farm equipment they can touch and climb on and sit inside. It all sits out in this big open field that sits next to the Kohler Creamery. And then the adults or the family members can get their grilled cheese sandwiches, their local made ice cream, and take some cheeses home as well that day.
Okay. Kohler Creamery are also hosting the Halloween Town. Tell us about that.
Yes, Halloween Town is another event that they have done in the past. They're bringing it back again this year. It includes a hay maze and some other festive Halloween-themed activities and festivities that'll all be on site. Also new to that component this year, or that event this year, will be a haunted hay maze that'll take place at night on some select dates. All that information also available on our website. You click through to the Heber Valley Artists and Cheese page, and they'll have more information and where to get tickets for that.
Okay. The Civil Air Force Utah Wing is hosting something this Saturday. Tell us about that.
Yes. So every year they host a planes and horsepower car show, typically in the summer months. This year it was scheduled for August. They had to postpone that. They've moved that to this Saturday, September 14th, which I think will actually work better for a little bit cooler temps for some of the participants. They're bringing a World War II plane that's been restored all the way from California for this special event and air show. And of course, if anyone wants to enter, I believe they're still accepting entries for the car show component, but it's a full day of fun. They'll have food trucks there. They'll even have a breakfast food truck so that people that show up in the morning will have some fun food to eat while they are walking through the museum. The museum is dedicated toward World War II and women in aviation. If you haven't been to the Commemorative Air Force Museum in the past, it's an excellent opportunity to participate in the Planes and Horsepower Car Show event, as well as walk through and see some of the beautifully preserved and displayed garb of that era and some other elements that all contribute back to the greater cause of bringing awareness to the World War II vets and those who have served.
Okay. I'm going to skip over the Volksmarks because I've got some folks coming on this week to talk more about that. But you also have coming up next week then the Plein Air Rendezvous. What's that?
Yes, the Plein Air Rendezvous. They do two events each year. One is typically over the 4th of July and the other tends to take place in the fall. It is an open air concept for watercolor and other artist paintings and renderings. So you will actually see artists sitting out in various fields and taking inspiration from the natural landscapes and some of the historic buildings and barns, etc., throughout the valley. They'll be painting and then presenting those at Midway Town Hall September 18th through the 21st, and those pieces will be on sale. You also can walk that art exhibit and meet some of the local and regional artists that'll be participating.
All right, and then the Schützenski, did I say that right?
You did. Way to go. Yeah, it's a tongue twister for sure. It's a heck of a name. The Schützenski Festival will take place at Soldier Hollow. This is their, oh goodness, I don't know the exact number of years, but consecutive seasons that they've done this event. It is a multiple day of festival and event. It happens October 4th through 6th, so save the date, put it on your calendar. There is a component that is free for spectators. They're also accepting any competitors that would like to participate. It's roller skiing, so you put the roller skis on, you participate in the competitions. They'll have food trucks, some music. In the past, they've had a beer garden that's been sponsored by one of the local breweries that's regional to the northern part of the state. It's just a full weekend of fun and festivities, and you get to cheer on the athletes unless you want to compete yourself.
All right, and then the Chamber also hosted a number of events coming up next week, first with your monthly luncheon. What will happen then?
Yes, thank you. So the Chamber events, the monthly luncheon will be Tuesday, September 17th. This is going to be sponsored by the Heber Valley Railroad with catering from Heber Valley Catering. The theme behind this, so each month we try to focus on it on a topic that we really target and hone in on. This month will be Unite Through Service. We're inviting a lot of our nonprofits and those that really depend on volunteerism to show up, talk about what their organization is, what they represent, and any upcoming opportunities to give back to the community, whether it be through time, dollars, or both. So Unite Through Service, Tuesday, September 17th at the Utah Valley University Wasatch campus on the north end of Heber, and that's from about noon till 1:30.
All right, and I think that this is a joint opportunity with the Park City Chamber Bureau as well, the Monthly Business University?
Correct, yes. Historically, Park City Chamber has hosted these Monthly Business University free course offerings. The new this year, our chamber will be partnering with the Park City Chamber. We'll be rotating locations between the Blair Education Center at the Park City Hospital and a location that will be announced for future educational courses here in Heber Valley. So every other month, Heber Valley will host, and on the other months, Park City will host on the location. A beautiful collaborative opportunity for us to open this up and network more within our community of businesses and business owners. The upcoming education course for September will be Wednesday, September 18th at noon. It will be at the Blair Education Center at the Park City Hospital. And this month will focus on operational excellence. So it's open to any and all that are chamber members for Park City Chamber or Heber Valley Chamber. Really encouraging if you're a startup, an entrepreneur, a small business, all the way up to large business. If you want to learn more about how to improve upon some of your operational practices, this may be a really great luncheon to participate in.
Okay. And then also the After Hours Mixer coming up. This is what, just a networking event?
Yes, correct. We do these each month. We work within our chamber, our Heber Valley Chamber businesses and business members. This month will be Thursday, September 26th from 4 to 6 p.m. It's free for all to come and attend. We encourage you to bring business cards. It's very casual. You can pop in. You don't have to be there for the full duration, that full 2 hours. Come at a time that works for you within that 4 to 6 p.m. time frame. Black Rock Mountain Resort is going to be hosting, and they're going to be providing food and beverage from their On the Rocks bar, which is on their main level when you enter into that beautiful mountainside resort. Highly encourage people just RSVP so we get a good head count on how much food and beverage to provide, but look for these to happen each month. The date may change a little bit, but it's always from 4 to 6 p.m. trying to catch people on the tail end of a typical work day.
All right. And then you also have an opportunity for folks to meet with the executive director of the Heber Valley Chamber.
Yes, Dallin, our executive director, he hosts a every other month event in the morning called Donuts with the Director. The next ones, this is more of a put this on your radar, save the date. The next one will be Wednesday, October 9th. It's from 8:30 to 9:30. There's no formal agenda. We encourage people to try and show up right at that 8:30 mark, and then they can exit at a time that's most convenient for them. This gives Dallin, our executive director, an opportunity to keep a finger on the pulse of what the dialogue is within the community, any pain points, any hot topics or emerging topics that we need to be aware of, and allows some open and candid conversation with our executive director and the local business owners and even residents along the Wasatch Back. So all are welcome to join for that. Free donuts, coffee, and juice provided to the at those.
Okay, and then save the date. This isn't happening until early December, but you have an annual chamber holiday gala. Tell us about that.
Yes, we do. It's a formal gala. This year's theme will be denim and diamonds. So fun kind of spin on a formal chamber holiday gala event. It'll be held again at the Zermatt Resort. It'll be December the 3rd at 5:30 p.m. And this sells out every year. Tickets are on sale currently. That's why I wanted to mention it today. If there's anyone interested in buying single tickets or even a table. Also, sponsorships are available. But yeah, save the date for that December 3rd at 5:30 p.m. for that holiday gala.
All right. And I wanted to ask you about this sustainability survey that's going on. What's this about?
Yeah. Thank you for asking. So, watching and seeing the extremely positive impact that the Visit Park City team and the Park City Chamber has had on their sustainable initiative really over the last few years, Heber Valley Chamber and Tourism Office took a page out of that book, so to speak, and we are leaning into what does sustainability mean for our community and our growing valley. With some of the substantial growth that we've seen over the last several years, particularly during and since COVID and what's yet to come, we wanted to take a deep dive and understand what does sustainability mean for our local residents, whether that be new or multiple generation. What does that mean for our local businesses, everything from startups to small to large? And how do we really put our arms around what our community culture represents and how we can better preserve that going forward? So it goes a step beyond the typical initiatives of leave no trace, pack it in, pack it out, be wise in the wilderness, stay far away from the wildlife, et cetera. Those are all super important, and those are definitely touch points in our greater sustainability initiative and effort. This local survey that we recently released, which is available in our newsletter, so sign up on our website if you're not already receiving those. But this survey is our opportunity to pull the residents and business owners and say, what does the Way of the West, which is the coined phrase that we're leaning into, what does the Way of the West look like to you? What would you like to see us preserve? What would you like to see added into our community, and how does all this tie back into sustainability on a larger scale?
Okay, anything else you wanted to add, Jessica?
No, lots going on. Just visit our website at gohubervalley.com for calendar of events and recreational opportunities and special things that you can be aware of.
Okay, thanks for your time this morning. Well, locals can share their thoughts about a proposed 65-unit golf lodge. That's part of the Sky Ridge development at two public hearings this month. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more on that.
The Sky Ridge development is tucked between U.S. 40 and the Jordanelle Reservoir on nearly 700 acres in northern Wasatch County. It will eventually include almost 500 homes and a host of leisure amenities, including equestrian and golf facilities. Up next in development plans is a golf lodge, which will overlook a three-hole mountain course and driving range. But the lodge's developers must jump through a few extra hoops before the project can be approved. That's because they want the lodge to be 75 feet tall, more than double the existing 35-foot limit. To build that high, they need a legislative development agreement. In a tour last week, developers told Wasatch County leaders the topography will make the building's planned height seem less dramatic. Much of the lodge will be below road level since it sits on a steep hillside. Three separate government groups must vote yes on the height exception, and at each of those meetings, there will be opportunities for public comment. The first public hearing will be held by the Wasatch County Planning Commission Thursday at 6 p.m. Commissioners will make their recommendations to the County Council about the development agreement, site plan, and parking plan. The Wasatch County Council will then vote on the plans, although an agenda for its next meeting on September 8th hasn't yet been published. And the Jordanelle Specially Planned Area Planning Committee is set to consider the Sky Ridge plans at a meeting Tuesday. Plans call for the lodge to have 65 condo-style rental units. Three more units will be set aside for the Military Installation Development Authority, or MIDA. It's a state organization originally founded to oversee projects to benefit members of the military. Developers say the lodge and leisure amenities at Sky Ridge will offer, quote, meaningful discounts to veterans and military members, but meaningful hasn't been defined yet. The lodge will also feature a restaurant, a spa, and a rooftop observation deck for stargazing. Downstairs, the golf facilities include a three-hole mountain course that can convert into a nine-hole short course, a driving range, a simulator, and professional golf coaches. Details about how to attend the upcoming public hearings are available at kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And Park City Performing Arts House released its lineup for the 2024-25 Winter Season Performance Series. It's a diverse offering of acts, including dance, music, and something new, conversations with local Olympic and Paralympic athletes. The season begins this weekend with one of four free shows featuring the Excellence Concert Series. Saturday's show features Broadway and Beyond, a musical experience featuring songs from iconic Broadway shows, including Phantom of the Opera, Les Mis, and Wicked. Executive Director Amber Conley says other free shows will happen in October, November, and December.
Excellence in Community is a organization that brings in professional musicians around from Utah and provide free concerts for the community.
The musical duo Black Violin performs Wednesday, October 2nd, merging classical melodies with the rhythmic pulse of hip-hop. Several National Geographic Live shows, she says, are also on the schedule.
Nat Geo Live, we have three explorers coming in. Andres Russo, he's an expert in volcanoes. Nalini Nakarni is a forest ecologist, and she's actually lives here, works as a professor at the University of Utah, but is world-renowned for her studies in forest ecology in the rainforest. And then the last one is Doug Smith, absolutely phenomenal. He is a wolf expert with Yellowstone.
The Andy Grammer concert set for October 19th sold out in 5 days when it went on sale this summer. She says there are about 20 tickets remaining, but none of the seats are together. Conley's also worked out a partnership with Park City resident and former U.S. ski team spokesman Tom Kelly for a speaker series called Behind the Gold, bringing in the likes of Ted Ligety, Chris Waddell, and Peekaboo Street, all scheduled to be in an interview-type situation with Tom Kelly. Other popular programs sure to be a hit is Bill Nye, The Science Guy on October 30th, and the Frozen Sing-Along happening December 30th. For a complete rundown and a link to buy tickets, you can go online to kpcw.org.